Being joined now by David Williams with Missouri River Resources, the MHA Nation. We like to check in with a segment that we like to call Energy Empowerment, as the MHA Nation is really from the top all the way down to the bottom, and from the bottom all the way to the top, a Native American-run company, if you will. And David Williams, the CEO, I love what they're trying to do there. I call it empowerment because the oil and gas industry is one of those industries that is really a leader out there, that they create jobs, they create opportunity. And that's the thing. They create more than just jobs. They actually create opportunity for those to create more opportunity. That's why I love what's going on out there in the MHA Nation with Missouri River Resources. So, David Williams, how are you doing today?
I am doing excellent.
And I hope that was an accurate introduction for you, sir.
Oh, heck, you know, I mean, I tell you what, you know, if you're in the oil business, you know, 99% of the time, you have to be optimistic. And if oil's above $60, you know, everybody felt the $28, you know. So I mean, things are moving, you know, and things look a little bit brighter, at the end of the day, and we're all moving forward. So you know, the cup's always has to be half full in this business, but it's just the way you have to live your life, I guess, otherwise. But we feel pretty good about where we're at right now. So,
well, that's good to hear. Of course, you know, about I want to say about 20-some% of the Bakken's oil reserves are either under, or you've got, you know, opportunity to those. I'll let you clarify that in a second here. But talk to me a little bit about, you know, you guys have quite a bit of stake in this, and also, do you guys have you guys come up with kind of a price point that you look forward to, or is it still kind of, you know, there's still all over the board even within your acreage of oil field there?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, I mean, everywhere, you know, whether it be in the Bakken or the Permian, Eagle Ford, you look for that. First of all, you look for that break even point, and you want to be above that, obviously. But, you know, with technology, you know, more frac sand, more stages, more intel from, as other companies share their, I guess, they're no longer secrets if they're sharing them, but people are starting to understand exactly how to frac these wells. And having said that, the EURs have become a little bit higher. You know, back, you know, if you go 5-6 years ago, maybe there were 500,000-600,000 barrels EUR. Now they're, you know, 1.1, 1.2 million. So your economics become very, very lucrative, you know, on moving forward in drilling. You know, of course, every area is site-specific, but if you do it right, if we find our, you know, a good state, We $50 a barrel for us. You know, if it's above 50, and we sharpen our pencils and we talk with our vendors, you know, or our people who help us drill the well, you know, the service companies, and we work together on this. Is, you know, everybody had a heyday at $147 a barrel, but I think we're a little bit smarter than we were back then. I'm not saying anybody was dumb. It's just that you kind of get a little giddy at $147 a barrel for whatever reason. But we're here. We're looking at drilling. We have a 40-well project, and we're just hoping things stay above 60, and we should be a profitable company.
You just mentioned 40-well projects. What would you, I guess, clarify? Classify your current rig count at? Is that 40 well projects, or some of those in the future? What would you classify your current rig count at, I guess?
Well, right now we have got one rig working for us, and we just started our project. We just got our third well done. We just put in the liner on our third well, cemented it, and we're starting drilling our fourth well on a 320 acre space unit. Then we're going to move to another 5-well. And then hopefully by the end of the summer, start on a 23-well project down by the Little Missouri.
Boy, that's pretty exciting. Let me get back to that one question about a fifth of the Bakken reserves. You and I have talked about this before, and I do apologize because I haven't registered it in a way that I guess I can articulate it very easily to where I remember it. And that's why, is it about 20% of the Bakken reserves are under your MHA Nation, or what is the correct way to, I guess, say that?
Oh, yeah, if I want to be more exact, I would say around 17% of total production comes from the MHA Nation, which in turn, you know, then is divided, I think, two-thirds to one-third from allottees, private landowners, and then a third of that 17% would be actual tribal tracts that the government would get, so to speak.
Okay, and of course, you know, I'm looking at that 5,000-foot view of, I think, 20, you know, the 20% is, yeah, we're rounding up, but I think that's going to be okay for just kind of, you know, speaking like the way that we speak to move conversation along. So the next thing I wanted to ask you about is innovation. I know that MHA Nation, you guys take a lot of pride in education as well as innovation, trying to empower Native Americans to really embrace this energy innovation. So talk to me about both the education and some of the innovation you guys have working there on the reservation.
Okay, thank you. Right now, we currently have a great relationship with San Juan School of Energy down in Farmington, New Mexico. And there's a longer story on how we met them, but I met him through conferences in Washington, D.C., and his name was Randy Pacheco, and I say in the past tense because he no longer works for them, but we kept the relationship, and he was the head of development of among students for lease operations and all of the oil field stuff that they do there down in the San Juan Basin. Well, now we have an ability, you know, for our kids up here to get a degree in lease operations. Education here in the petroleum industry really is the new currency of it. I mean, you got to have that knowledge walking in the door because of all the complex issues that arise from wells and, you know, complex well technology, you know, and understanding how to get that barrel from 10,000 feet in the ground, you know, and send it down the line and get it sold. So we're working diligently on educating our youth as we move forward here in 2018 to offer a degree online and then down there for a semester or maybe two to get a hands-on. And as we help, you know, with our wells, they could be an intern and get them out there to get the live experience. So that's one facet. And the other facet is now we're starting a new endeavor, and we'll be finished here this year on creating a tribal energy management seminar, meaning we can offer a degree in tribal energy management throughout the nation in Indian country, where we want to involve industry, state, and tribal members to understand the complexities of really working on a Native American reservation and establishing energy, not just oil and gas. It could be coal, it could be water, it could be wind, solar. So, because, you know, there was companies from day one, and I think if we look at where their acreage is, you know, and as we had the land rush here, some chose to stay off federal lands for certain reasons, you know, one being, you know, 49 steps or 9 months to do one drilling permit through the BIA and BLM, et cetera. Now, we've gone through that. Now it's 8-10 years later, and we are actually trying to create a dialogue with industry, with the Bureau, and also with the fellow nations, you know, we're starting to say Crow Agency, coal, okay, even up north, Fort Peck, oil, where people can learn to converse with what federal and tribal laws create from being us being a sovereign nation and having our own regulatory issues, and the BLM having their, you know, permits, and of course the state. So we're trying to create this dialogue that says, okay, attend this class and get a deeper view of exactly what goes on here. What people have done, you think the Enerpluses and the Hellcon, whoever up here, they assign a guy to work with the tribe at all the meetings. So there is a process and movement on creating that type of relationship. And this class does is just continue that and make it more understanding of really what the natives go through.
David Williams.
That was a long explanation. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hey, it's good. Sometimes, you know, my program, more people get asked questions they haven't been asked in a while, and so they end up processing right on the air. It's actually quite fun to listen to and watch because I totally understand what you're saying. And luckily for you, you've got an audience out there that understands what you're talking about or has the aspiration to learn more, because like I said, I firmly believe that the energy industry is one of the few kings of the economy. And what I mean by kings of the economy is they're at the top of the food chain. They supply so many other industries. And one could even argue that the energy industry is even gone over ag, because you need diesel to operate a lot of ag equipment. So many of the polymers now are made with the feedstock from energy products and that sort of thing. So energy is so important, and that's why we feel it's such a need to talk about this. Of course, with yourself, David Williams with MHA Nation, who's right now in energy empowerment happening there at the reservation. And this is a neat story, and we're glad that we're tracking it here. And just to kind of wrap up a little bit here, I'm not sure if that was I think my transition might have been as good as your explanation there. We kind of both got a little long in the tooth, but that's just fine. So just kind of wrapping up a little bit, what's next for you guys, kind of short-term project here? I know we got the Williston Basin Conference coming up, and I wanted to ask you kind of about that a little bit when it comes to working with other energy companies. Now, you guys are kind of a unique situation because, you know, what you're doing there has great not only business acumen behind it, but also it's got some very good societal, cultural positives that are going to come out of this. What is it like interacting with some of the other energy companies, whether it be at the Williston Basin Petroleum Council or, you know, the midstream, upstream, downstream companies? Are they receptive for what you guys are trying to do there at the on the reservation, or do they look at you as pretty serious competition?
Well, I don't know if I'm there at the competition level yet. You know, as a company, you know, creating the company and becoming an actual chartered company in 2012, and trying to find out what leases were left, it was tough. But working with other companies that are on the reservation, like an Enerplus, you know, who had, you know, tribal tracts that were open and would say, hey, you guys want 3% of this? You know, this is what's open. Marathon. We had one 25% working interest. So we started out as a working interest group with the actual oil companies that were on the reservation. So it was kind of like a door-to-door salesman, right? We're going to everybody, and we're just looking for what's open and what's left, and creating that relationship, because to me, obviously, everybody knows in the industry, relationships are really key and really important. So that's what I tried to do, and I've got some great relationships with industry that's on the reservation, and they've worked with us. We've had, you know, various working interest partners and now as we transition into the operatorship, some companies are actually working interest partners with us. So it has switched, but I think what the key thing here is, they're realizing that Missouri River Resources, we can drill a well just as good as anybody. if we want to put it that way. And eventually, yeah, I like competition. I do. I grew up as, you know, in sports and athletics, and I used to coach. So, I teach kids how to win. So I like to win.